Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
This episode is part one of my conversation with Julian Applebaum of Draft Express and the creator of the great mid-major prospect videos on draftexpress.com. We start out by talking about Julian's background and evaluation style, then take a really close look at Justin Patton of Creighton. We finish with a few thoughts on Grayson Allen, Luke Kennard, and a personal favorite, Dwayne Bacon. This episode is sponsored by GlassesUSA.com, the absolutely no-brainer best place to buy any kind, any brand of glasses you need for the best prices. So without further ado, you are listening to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. Welcome back, guys, to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. I'm Sean Darenthal, your host. This is not a solo pod. Again, we have another great host. Julian Applebaum of Draft Express is joining me. Thanks, Julian, a ton for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to be here.
So just in the way of a quick introduction, Julian, you have a pretty impressive resume, I think, or at least a much more impressive resume than I have. You, as soon as you graduated, you went to go work for Synergy Sports, right?
That is correct. Yes, I was logging games for Synergy Sports. Yep.
Well, that's cool. I have a question to ask about that later. I think Synergy, obviously, you know, that's one of the peak companies right now in the NBA that supplies video for like so many people. I think it's pretty incredible what they do and the volume that they put out. But then after that, you went to go work for the Sacramento Kings D League affiliate team, the Reno Bighorns, I assume doing some video stuff and probably a lot more than that. And now you're at Draft Express again, making pretty awesome videos. I really, really like your mid-major prospects videos. Obviously, I think on Draft Express, the video content has become kind of their bread and butter, maybe more so than the traditional print articles, which are obviously good too. But I'm really happy to have you on because of this, because of your expertise in these lesser known prospects, which we'll get to. But first, I want to ask you about Synergy Sports. First of all, how did you get that job? And then I've always been curious about how Synergy gets their film clips up so quickly. Are the games, like, are they literally watched and tagged by just sheer manpower, or is it more of like a program that predicts possessions and sets and stuff like that?
Well, it's actually pretty impressive what they do, and it's done by manpower. So they'll they have a lot of different guys working for them, some more experienced than others. When I was working there, I was not charting and logging big time games. I mean, they do everything from women's college basketball to European basketball to the NBA, obviously. And they get the games up there right away. But it's an interesting experience, and I for sure was able to learn a lot from doing it because you're charting every single play and breaking it down.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, every aspect of it. So they do a good job of getting the games up there right away, and it's really become an incredibly useful service.
So not to disparage any of their employees or the company, but the thought just occurred to me that, like, how much error do you think there is? Obviously, at some point, it becomes a little bit subjective, right? Categorizing these plays and some of that stuff. And then there are guys that are more experienced or less experienced. I assumed you got better at it as you did it. How much error do you think there is in some of that stuff?
I mean, there's definitely some human error involved, and there's a learning curve in doing it. But the guys that they have on the big-time games and the big-time Division I games, the NBA guys, they've been doing it for some time. So I think they're really good at what they do, and hopefully there's not too much human error involved.
Yeah.
But if you're on there every now and then, you'll see, you know, something that's not exactly correct. But for the most part, as far as, you know, charting those things done by humans, they get it right for the most part.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Like, the speed at which they do that is pretty amazing. I guess no wonder, with all of those employees they have to pay, no wonder that it's not the most inexpensive product right now. Anyway, all right, let's move on. I was wondering if I could get from you some of your scouting ideals. Like, when you're scouting players, especially trying to project them to the NBA, what's your process? Which attributes do you value the most? Which common attributes that people value do you think are a bit overrated? That kind of thing.
Well, I think certainly you got to look at the guy's entire body of work. You know, you don't want to just look at one college game and see what he did in one opponent, because there's so much change that can happen. So if you look at a guy's entire body of work, you know, starting in high school, the AAU process, everything that's gotten them to where they are, and then, you know, you think about that and then how their game translates to the NBA level. So it's always good to look at the guy's physical profile. You know, does he have good length? Does he have good size? Has he grown? How has his body matured? How has his game transformed over time? And how do you think his game will translate to the NBA? Then you can look at, you know, what college level is he playing at? What role is he on with his team? Has that role changed over time? So there's so many different factors to look at. And, you know, for each guy, I think there's different things you can put a certain level of importance on. And so it's really just the full body of work that you want to look at and try not to miss anything.
That's interesting. I today was just talking to somebody about Jamal Murray and how I thought some of his passing instincts that I saw in those Pan Am games that he was playing for Canada right before his freshman year at Kentucky, how he showed a lot of that, but didn't show that much at Kentucky. And he was coming into the draft with a bit of a non-passer reputation. Guys like Scal Labissiere come to mind, right? Somebody with a great high school profile that didn't do anything in his first year. Harry Giles right now, somebody that's kind of a question mark because of, you know, these seemingly two different players that we're looking at. So how do you weigh that? How do you weigh, you talked about the full body approach. How do you weigh their high school stuff versus usually of these top guys, just that one or maybe 2 years in college?
You know, that's an interesting question, because especially with this, you know, one and done thing, like for a guy like Giles, you know, where is he at? Because he hasn't really had a chance to play a whole lot. He hasn't really been healthy. So, you know, I think it's different really for each guy in each situation mm-hmm. that they're in. And you have to put, you know, it's a difficult thing to put value on certain aspects of what they've done in college versus what they've done in high school. So I really think it's an individual basis thing for each of these guys.
So basically, Sean, don't be stupid. Obviously, there's no magic answer for that. Yeah, I thought that might be the unfortunate answer. Well, so going kind of along with that, there are going to be prospects that, you know, stay a lot longer than just, you know, the one and done thing, and that we're going to have a lot more data on. And a lot of these guys, especially recently, obviously, the trend is that high-level freshmen get drafted at the top of the draft, and then as we trickle down, the percentage of seniors and juniors, upperclassmen, increases. And as I do this more and more, I try to watch more, and I talk to more and more experts like yourself, and I'm realizing how difficult it is to separate these non-top 10 elite prospects. Like from, you know, the end of the first, especially the second round, it seems like sometimes we're just throwing darts at kind of foggy guesses. So how do you go about separating these prospects in the second round, like 40 through 60? Is it kind of just, hey, they're all in the same tier, you know, what's your preference? Or how much distinction is there, and how should we go about trying to make those distinctions?
Right. I mean, once you get into that, you know, anything past the 20th pick, it's going to become so difficult to find a guy that you're feeling, you know, confident about drafting, you know, and mm-hmm. projecting his role, because that's just, as you've seen, it's hard. And, you know, teams have hit on the 30th through 40th pick. Like this year, Jokic is blown up, and he was taken, yeah, I think with a 35th pick. And you can't think the Nuggets really knew what they yeah. were getting with him, but yeah. there are certain guys where, you know, you see upside, you think they're a good kid, you have good intel on them, and they've shown potential in certain aspects where you're going to say, I'm going to take this guy with the 35th pick or the 40th pick. And, you know, if we hit on it, great. But most of the time with those picks, those guys, you know, end up in the D League, or they don't even make the roster. So if you can find a guy where you think there's, you know, potential in a certain area to grow, and you take that chance, then it works out and great. But as it's shown, a lot of the time it hasn't.
Yeah, obviously it's so difficult, but I wonder, and I don't know how much you know about this, but I'll ask anyway. When you're sitting in a war room, and you know such and such team has their big board, and they get to, you know, the 45th pick in the second round, how often do you think somebody that they had a first round grade on falls that low? Do you think that, practically speaking, they're actually picking guys that maybe they feel a little bit better about, that you know, just happened to slide to them and their particular evaluation had them a little bit higher than everybody else? Or do you think at that point, everybody's kind of just throwing darts?
You know, that's also a good question. I think mostly you'd like to be prepared where, you know, you're prepared for every single situation in the draft. And, you know, for us, when I was in Reno and we were preparing for the D-League draft, which is a bit of a different story, you'd like, you know, be prepared for every situation, and have good information on every guy so that, you know, any situation comes up, you're ready to make that pick. But I think sometimes guys do slip and everybody's got a little bit of a different big board. So I'm sure there are situations in which, you know, a guy gets to a 45th pick and the team is surprised to see him sitting there and they take a chance on him. And maybe they knew something that other teams didn't.
Okay, well, let's move on to somebody else. Get into this deep dive of the single prospect that we have today that I think will probably go in the lottery if his stock continues to trend how it's trending now. Somebody who's maybe just in the past month or so really, really caught fire, at least in the mainstream media, Justin Patton, the 6'11 redshirt freshman out of Creighton. Why don't you, Julian, describe for us what you think are his major, major offensive strengths?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. And like you said, he's really blown up over the last month or two. In terms of his offensive strengths and his biggest strengths in general, I think is just his size and his mobility. He's 6'11". He really gets up and down the floor very well. He's an incredibly fluid athlete for a guy his size. And I think that's really why he's caught on, because it's hard to find guys his size and his age who move the way he does. Yeah. He's an incredibly fluid rim runner. He gets up and down the court with ease. You know, you see him running down the floor and he's beating guards down the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the pace a lot of teams in the NBA play these days, that seems like a very translatable skill, and it's not really something you can teach. But then to go along with it, he's shown a developing skill level that I think has surprised a lot of people and sort of helped raise his stock into, you know, maybe the 10 to 15 range. He has some soft touch around the rim. He's got a really good left hand, and he's a righty. So you see him, he can operate out of the post. He's got some quick footwork, and he's got a jump shot. I don't think they let him shoot too much, probably, but you see every now and then he'll get up a three, and he's got soft touch, and I think that's something that can develop at the NBA level for sure.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed everything that I was thinking of. I think the mobility and just the general coordination that he has is probably his greatest strength, especially going forward, just because of the potential that it speaks to. He's one of those guys that we all kind of love since Anthony Davis was drafted and his story was told, that grew 7 inches, you know, between his freshman and sophomore year or something like that, who has years of developing guard skills. And then once he kind of got the coordination back, maybe around his senior year or something like that, you know, became a much bigger prospect because of that added size. I recommend for anybody who hasn't already, go on Draft Express and watch Julian's video on him. Really, really insightful. It was one of his breakout games against Villanova, which at the time they were the number one team in the country or top five or something like that. So if you haven't seen that, go do it. Something else that I think I really like is there is a little bit of vision to his game, a little bit of passing acumen that I think needs to be developed. He's not delivering the ball very precisely, you know, shooting pockets, that kind of thing. But I think that he actually sees the floor pretty well. Oftentimes when he's doubled or in their motion style offense, sometimes even with him, he floats out a little bit and it kind of begins to look like a five out system, and he's driving baseline and he's able to throw it one-handed kind of hook pass to the opposite weak side corner, like that kind of stuff. Like, even though he's only doing it a few times a game, those flashes that he shows, I think really intrigues you because, like you said, he's really, really translatable to the NBA, can play in kind of a pass happy style. Obviously, right now, he's more of a rim runner, more of a pick and roll kind of guy. But I think the pick and pop element of his game can also be developed a lot. His shooting stroke is really smooth. Obviously, he's got a great free throw percentage there. Okay, so let's move on to the offensive weaknesses. But before we get to that, I want to confide in you about a personal problem of mine. Even though I wasted too much money on them in high school, and as much as they are the go-to look for a lot of guys, I look super goofy in a hat. Pretty much any hat. I'm not sure if it's maybe my head shape, maybe my big nose, or the non-existent chin that I don't have, but I look truly awful in them. But there's another accessory that's just as common, and actually a flat-out superior accessory because they're usually very practical as well, glasses. Summer's coming, and everyone needs a good pair of sunglasses. And let's face it, we're all getting a little older, and our lens prescriptions probably need to be updated, and that's where GlassesUSA.com comes in. It's like having a giant warehouse of high-quality, name-brand glasses at the lowest prices right at your fingertips. Because it's all online, they cut out all the middlemen from the retailers to the labs, so the prices are excellent. They have the fastest delivery and a one-year 100% money-back guarantee. The best part is that if you don't like the glasses you choose within the first couple weeks, 14 days, no questions asked, money-back return plus free shipping. No problem. Of course, this wouldn't be a podcast sponsorship if we didn't give the listeners a special deal and promo code. If you enter the code ALMIGHTY, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, ALMIGHTY at checkout, you get 55% off any pair of glasses. We're talking your next pair of Ray-Bans, Oakleys, Tom Ford, Calvin Klein, and more at 55% off. GlassesUSA.com is really the only place it makes sense to shop for glasses. Again, that's GlassesUSA.com and promo code ALMIGHTY for 55% off any pair. Go update your glasses game and support this free podcast by using the ALMIGHTY promo code at checkout. What is it that kind of worries you if you're thinking about drafting him in the lottery?
Well, you know, he's still fairly raw in terms of skill level. But that's to be expected from a kid who is playing his first year of college basketball and he's only 19 years old.
Yeah.
But he at times when he gets the ball in the post, he looks sped up. Like you said, he shows flashes of having vision, which is incredibly impressive for a kid his age. But sometimes when he's got the ball in his hands, he looks, you know, he looks a little too sped up. He forces some passes. He forces some turnovers. So really just his general skill level on the offensive end, you know, how is he going to be able to find baskets in the half court at the NBA level when he's not just getting up and down and using his athleticism, right, and his mobility? But, you know, I think that's something that he's shown development in even this season. So, you know, I'm not too terribly worried about his skill level developing, but right now it certainly seems to be his biggest weakness.
Yeah. I would just add two other things to that, which I think is spot on. I think that he's not the kind of vertically explosive athlete that you want as kind of the stereotypical role man catching lobs over NBA defenders. He is amazingly coordinated and his footwork is like more advanced than you think and can kind of snake around defenders. But when it comes to just getting up over defenders, I think that's a little bit of a weakness. He can adjust to imperfect lob passes and that kind of thing. But when it, you know, when it just comes to the DeAndre Jordan, hey, I'm going to sky 6 inches over you and it doesn't matter who's there and I can finish this, I don't think he necessarily has that. And also the screen setting is horribly inconsistent. I've seen like maybe a handful of really, really good quality screens where contact is made in like a really meaningful way in, you know, the several games that I've watched. And I think that's something that's maybe too often overlooked, maybe even at the NBA level, where just creating a little bit more contact can lead to, you know, more room for you actually, you know, instead of you thinking about slipping to the rim and that's kind of all you're worried about. I think creating a little bit more space for the guard is eventually going to create more space for you as you roll. Anyway, all right, let's move on to defensive strengths. What do you see from him that makes you think that he can be a rim protector at the NBA level?
Well, like you said, his size and his mobility, and I think you kind of nailed it. He's not really an explosive athlete. He's a fluid athlete. Mm-hmm. And he gets off the floor well. I think he has decent but not great instincts on the defensive end of the floor. Mm-hmm. Something that can be taught. He moves his feet well. He's mobile. He's able to defend ball screens a little bit on the perimeter, and he can get away with some things just because of his size. But I just think generally the athleticism and the size will give him a chance to be a rim protector. Obviously, he's got to get a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
But I think generally his size, and you know, I'd love to get a wingspan measurement on him.
I was just about to ask you actually if you knew off the top of your head the wingspan, because I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, not something that I've seen. I saw him play earlier this year in person versus St. John's, and based off the eye test, I don't know that he has an incredibly plus wingspan. It looks relatively average, but that's off my eye test. So I think that'll be huge for him to get a measurement on that and see if he's got plus length at his size, then his rim protection should be very translatable to the NBA level.
Yeah, I think so. I would just add, obviously, I agree with all of that. I would just add that some of other defensive strengths are more oriented toward the perimeter. Tons of times, I was super impressed by how well he executed the Creighton scheme. They often just have him back off of pick and rolls. He rarely traps, rarely shows. He kind of just corrals guards. But every once in a while, he'll get out there a little bit and contest. He'll switch for a few seconds until he can get back onto his man. And he's often, he rarely makes mistakes in those situations. Like I said, he's so mobile and his lateral slide is so smooth and just so natural. Like, he really does look like a guard out there, like a wing defender. And oftentimes he's pointing to his teammates, perimeter defenders, to get out to this guy or to switch back off of his man. So, you know, that kind of communication also, we know, is a big thing at the NBA level in the big man kind of directing, being the quarterback on defense. But then the problems often come, like you said, at the rim protection level. So just talk about a little bit, what are his defensive weaknesses? I know you already touched on them, but just kind of flesh them out a little bit more.
Well, two things on the defensive end of the floor, and I think they're both sort of related to his physical strength. In terms of defensive rebounding, he's only averaging six or so rebounds per game. And with the tempo that they play and with his size, I think his defensive rebounding definitely has room for improvement. His lower body looks a little on the weak side, and he often gets pushed off his spots and can't hold a box out. And his instincts aren't, you know, that great on the defensive glass where he can make up for that. So I think defensive rebounding is definitely an aspect he has room for improvement in. And then also occasionally, like you said, when he can drop in a ball screen, he's effective, but he can be a little upright at times when he's got a guard on the perimeter. And, you know, at the college level, he can get away with that, but I think he's got to do a better job of, you know, getting low, getting in a stance, and showing his size and mobility, because the physical tools are there. He's just got to do a better job of getting low and, you know, being consistently in a defensive stance rather than just relying on his size. So, but I think those are both correctable things. And again, if he gets stronger and adds a little more physicality to his game, the defensive rebounding thing will improve. And, you know, with good coaching at the NBA level, the ability to contain ball handlers and be in a stance is something that can improve as well.
Yeah, those are definitely the two things that I've noted. His defensive rebounding is sometimes really atrocious, actually. Just ball watching when the shot goes up, not preparing for position, you know, in kind of the flow of the play when you know that a shot's about to go up. Obviously, his strength is a weakness there. It gets pushed around a little bit too much, which, you know, when you're feeling that contact, you're trying to box out, you're bodying up, that obviously limits your verticality. And I think just overall, his timing isn't that great, which is kind of interesting. I don't know that I've seen this kind of dichotomy where he has, I think, shows pretty good intelligence in switching and understanding where he needs to be to corral guards on the perimeter. Yet as a weak side shot blocker, you know, the intelligence, I think, isn't there. Maybe it's a lack of timing. Maybe it's a lack of motor. Sometimes I think that's a little bit questionable on the defensive end, whereas on the offensive end, especially when he's searching for his own post-ups or whatever it is, his motor is pretty good. And like you said, I think that's probably something that's correctable. I wonder if you add the strength, if that's going to limit his mobility a little bit more. I wish that he had just a few more inches of length, which I think would help him be a better rim protector. So that's the only reason why I think I probably have him in the late end of the lottery as a pick. If he were, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches longer, or was just a little more explosive on the jump, I think bothering shots on the weak side would be one of his strengths, and then he could be, you know, like a top 10 pick pretty easily. So what do you think about projecting him? Where do you think he'll be drafted? Where do you think you have him on your own kind of quote-unquote personal big board, and kind of projecting him to the NBA? How do you think he fits?
You know, it's interesting because this draft, there at the top at least, there aren't too many big guys,
yeah,
you know, who are in that 10 to 15 range. There's Robert Williams from Texas A&M. There's Markkanen from Arizona, you know, and guys like that. And I think he probably falls behind those guys to me. Hmm. You know, and I would probably put him in the 12 to 15 range per se. But there's just so much room for upside with him. Like, he's only 19 years old. And just the room for growth and his game and how it's translatable to the NBA, I think will get him in that range. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the pre-draft process when he's going up against these other, you know, NBA level big guys and how he performs against them. Because he, you know, he's not getting that in conference play on a nightly basis.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
A lot of these guys who are going to be first round draft picks, at least from a big man perspective. So I think that'll be huge for him. A lot of those guys come from other conferences and, you know, get more tested from that spot on a nightly basis. And also, like I think you mentioned earlier, Creighton plays in such a up-tempo system, and that certainly benefited him. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's a thing for him that's translatable to the NBA level, the way a lot of teams play these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. Talk more about your comparison with Robert Williams, someone who I personally have a little bit lower than Patton at the moment. So why do you have it the other way around?
Well, you know, I would say it's like 1A and 1B. You know, I don't really think there's too much separation between the two of them. Patton's definitely got a little bit of size on him.
Yeah.
Williams is much more developed physically, and you know that is more translatable to the NBA level. But the fact that Patton's 6'11" and Robert Williams is maybe, you know, 6'9" or 6'10" might give Patton an edge. Mm-hmm. But just from a physical perspective, I think Williams maybe has him a little bit there. But
yeah,
you know,
I think the height maybe is a little bit, or at least maybe can be seen as a little bit of a non-issue, just because I think Williams' length probably makes it, like, their standing reach is probably, I think Williams probably has a standing reach that's, I would guess, a few inches longer, if only, you know, despite the fact that he's maybe 2 or 3 inches shorter than Patton is, you know?
Right. I think his wingspan is probably in the 7'4", 7'5" range, which sort of makes up for his lack of ideal size.
Yeah. And then obviously playing a little bit taller because of the explosion that Patton doesn't necessarily have, as we've kind of talked about. So are there any other thoughts about Patton? Something that we didn't get to? I know you said that you kind of have him in that late lottery area like I do. What are you going to be looking for as we go forward in the season that might change your mind, or that might kind of just solidify him right where he is?
You know, just to keep doing what he's been doing. Obviously, they had a major injury hit, Creighton did, and it'll be interesting to see how that changes their team down the road with Watson going down.
Yeah.
I know they've lost a couple games, and he'll probably have to shoulder a little bit of a heavier load on offense. So that's actually a good test for him. But I think just, you know, if he can improve physically and continue to show, you know, development on the offensive end in terms of skill level, I think he'll end in that 10 to 15 range if he does choose to come out.
Great. Okay, so more along the lines of other mid-major prospects and or big names that we talked about that are late first and second round prospects, since we do have the wonderful Julian Applebaum on with us, we should use his expertise. And instead of the 4 or 5 prospect deep dives that I usually go on in these episodes, I want to go quickly over a bunch of these guys. Obviously, you guys know that one of my goals of the podcast is that if you listen, you at least hear the name of any player that will get drafted, and that's obviously a really long list, and it may not happen, but with Julian here, we can knock off hopefully about 15 or so guys. We're going to run through as many as we can and keep it to maybe just like 20 or 25 more minutes of podcast time. But I want to start really quickly with Grayson Allen, Dwayne Bacon, and Luke Kennard. Julian, really quickly, just touch on those guys. Maybe of those three, who do you like the most? Who do you think translates better as an NBA prospect? And then just what are some of their weaknesses that might hold them back?
Okay, so Allen, Kennard, and Bacon. I think the one whose stock has risen the biggest this year is Kennard. And obviously he's had a great chance with that Duke, Tim, with the issues Allen has had off the court to kind of, you know, take the reins on that team. So I'm going to say Kennard's stock has risen the most. And in terms of pro projection, Allen is probably, you know, the most NBA ready in terms of from a physical perspective. He's a good athlete in space, and he can shoot the ball. He's shown that he can shoot the ball pretty well from three.
Yeah, I think that's true. Or at least it's projectable if it's a little bit inconsistent.
Right. His, you know, I almost think his athleticism is a bit overrated. He's a good athlete in space. When he's in a crowd, he's a bit heavy-footed, and he throws up some real, garbage shots around the basket. He can get there, but, and he's a strong, physical, straight-line driver. And, you know, I think he'll be able to carve out a niche at the NBA level as a bench guy who can come in and score and play off the ball, occasionally handle the point guard duties. But I see him as maybe a third or fourth guy off the bench down the road in the NBA. Bacon has a great physical profile. He's got good size to play the two or the three at the NBA level. He's really strong. He's a good athlete also in space. But his feel for the game comes and goes. But I also think he'll be able to score the ball at the NBA level. He relies a lot on his physicality to get to the rim and get downhill on straight line drives. But his, like I said, his feel for the game comes and goes. And as far as Kennard goes, he's a unique guy in that he relies on a lot of ball fakes and shot fakes, and his footwork is really crafty. And I think he's shown a lot of development this year in terms of being more than just a shooter.
Yeah,
he can play with the ball in his hands. He can play off the ball. He's a great shooter. Obviously, his athleticism is not ideal, but he's a really crafty guy. And I think his stock has really taken a big jump this year.
Yeah, Kennard is somebody that I think is kind of sitting in this gray area right now where I personally don't know what to do with him. Like you said, he relies a lot on the craft stuff instead of the normal athleticism that we're used to seeing from NBA prospects, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think just makes it a little more difficult to project. Like maybe that stuff works. There are a few guys definitely over the years who have made that work, who have that really high level of craft, but you know, seeing NBA prospects without like a certain baseline of athleticism, which I think Kennard probably falls just below, makes it really difficult. I think you nailed it on all of those guys. Listeners of the podcast know that I'm not super high on Grayson Allen, and you know, whatever disparaging comments you want to make about how maybe his athleticism is a little bit overrated. And I think his handle, I think being at the point guard is going to be really difficult for him. I think his handle is not there and hasn't developed for some reason, and finishing is a problem for him, I think, despite kind of his reputation as a vertical athlete. Dwayne Bacon is someone that intrigues me a little bit more, I think, than at least how it sounded, how high you were on him, if only because his first step and his offensive creation feel, I think, is there. He shows flashes of a little bit of a vision. On Florida State, I think, I don't know, their offense to me seems like a little bit limited. It's kind of like with Rutan Mays and him, it's kind of your turn, my turn kind of thing. I think maybe they have a system that doesn't really help them move the ball as much as maybe they could, especially with some other talented prospects that they have there. Obviously, Isaac is one of those guys. But Bacon is somebody that definitely intrigues me. I think that he has the potential to be also a defensive stopper on the wing if only his motor would kind of catch up to his developed body. Anyway, all right, so let's move on, unless you want to respond to something that I said there.
No, I think you nailed it. I for Allen and Kennard, if they can become knockdown shooters, they'll have a chance. But like you said, I'm not that high on Allen either, so yeah, We'll see what happens.
All right, so let's go through these guys. I've kind of designed this in a way. We have this pool of players a list that Julie and I are looking at, and it's guys that I think are being considered on kind of the consensus media draft board about after 20 or 25 in that first round. And several of the guys that are in this group I've excluded because we've either talked about them before or they're international prospects, or I think maybe they're just talked about too much. So let's start with somebody that is rising right now, and maybe we'll rise out of this range that I'm talking about as a sub 20 prospect. Jason Collins, somebody that you've done a great video on recently. We'll end on that teaser of John Collins. Part two will come out in a couple days. We get the John Collins, Zach Collins, PJ Dozier, Cam Oliver, and a bunch more. Definitely keep an eye out for that one. Quick hitter, really fun. Please, guys, we have had a recent bump in listeners over the past couple episodes. This podcast is free, and if you like it, please, at least some of you, go to iTunes or wherever you listen to this stuff. Give me a 5-star rating and a nice review. Would really appreciate it. Nothing helps more. Also, go check out glassesusa.com and use the promo code ALMIGHTY for 55% off at checkout. That helps out the podcast too. Again, you can always follow me on Twitter at Ode to Odin and email me whatever you want, ideas, critics, that kind of stuff is always welcome at odetoodinpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. Have a good one.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings, much more. Geico's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with Geico, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than Geico. More power to you. Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more. Napa
know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for 6 people facing forward, 2 people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings, much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.